Welcome to this week's episode of Active Healthy Aging. I'm your host, Coach Ken. Each week, we will be discussing practical health and fitness strategies and topics to help you regain, maintain, or improve your health and movement practice. Ultimately, our goal is to empower you to create a personal movement practice that will support your activities of daily living, make you fall resistant, and living independently for as long as possible. So before we start this week's episode, I want to review sessions or episodes 1 and 2, since they're related to the topic I'm going to be talking about this week. In episode 1, we expanded on the elements of fitness that you may or may not be including in your workouts. And some of these, I'm sure you are, but there's a few in there that you might be neglecting that I would encourage you to pursue in your movement practice. So those fitness elements that should be part of a complete fitness program would include cardiorespiratory type training, which would be for most of you what you would call aerobic training, stamina, strength, flexibility and mobility, power, speed, coordination, agility, balance, both static and dynamic balance, and accuracy. So as much as possible, try to include as many of those elements as you can in your movement practice to really round out your program. In episode 2, we discussed integrating your movement practice to include working in all three planes of motion. And again, those planes of motion were forward and backwards, lateral, and rotation. Today, we'll look at the most fundamental movement patterns that all able-bodied humans should be able to perform on a regular basis. Early in my strength and conditioning career, I was fortunate to have several amazing mentors. One of them, Juan Carlos Santana, no, not the musician, but he is a trainer out of Florida who introduced me to this concept that I'm about to discuss, and also Paul Check down in San Diego County. They both characterized these four pillars of human movement, as they call them, as these foundational pillars that all able-bodied humans need to be able to perform. So, what are these pillars? Well, they're four movement patterns that you're probably using most of every day. The first one is gait or locomotion. The second one is level changes, which is anything which causes you to change the level of your body. This could be squatting, hip hinging or deadlifting, or even stepping up onto a step. So we have gait or locomotion, level changes. The next pillar is pushing and pulling. And then the fourth pillar is rotational movement. So I'm going to take a few minutes and talk about each of these, so that you've got a little grasp of what these movement patterns are and perhaps a way to integrate them into your training program. So when we look at gait or locomotion, this is pretty obvious. Things like walking, or I consider any other human-powered transportation from point A to point B. It could include cycling, rowing, running, skating, cross-country skiing. So it's basically what most of you would call aerobic exercise. But obviously, gait is a foundational movement that we really need to preserve and protect as we age, especially. Level changes like squatting and deadlifting have very obvious practical applications in that a squatting motion, something as simple as from a seated position in a chair to standing, is a form of squat. And while most of us don't want to think about this too prematurely, one of the criteria for whether or not we get put into assisted living is whether or not we can get out of a chair or off the toilet. So this ability to change our level and stand up from a seated position is really critical. The deadlift or a hip hinge is a very functional movement for picking up objects off the floor. And the key is, again, as I said last week in that episode, we want to make sure that we're really pushing our hips back, moving our center of gravity to the rear, and using those big posterior muscles to lift, not just pulling up with our back. The third pillar, again, is pushing and pulling. So if you imagine, there's only three ways you can push and three ways you can pull, essentially. So the first push would be if you're placing something up overhead, like placing an object up on a shelf, or obviously in a weight room doing an overhead press. We can also push horizontally, which might be pushing, say, a very heavy shopping cart forward with our arms. Pushing horizontally in the gym would correspond to something like a push-up or a bench press. The third push is a low push. So this might be something as basic as putting your hands on the edge of the arms of a chair and pushing yourself up to help you get up. In a gym setting, this might correspond to like a dip motion where you're up on parallel bars and lowering yourself up and down. And in the pulling range, we have those same three positions. We can pull from a high position, which would be like a chin-up or a pull-up. We can pull horizontally, which is more like a what we call a body row in the gym parlance. And then we can pull from low, which is simply bending over and then bending our arms to pull an object up to us. So you might have a bag of groceries on the floor. You kind of hip hinge over, and then you pull it the rest of the way with your arms. So pushing and pulling, we have those three directions that we have options to train in those three positions: high, horizontal, and a low push or pull. And the last element or pillar of human movement is rotation. And the two basic fundamental patterns of rotation can be learned or visualized in a chopping motion. So imagine you're chopping wood, you're bringing an axe up overhead, and then you're coming across, usually somewhat diagonally, across your body and striking an object. This would not be the same as a bad golf swing, such as some of the strokes I've been guilty of in my attempts at playing golf. The other pattern of rotation is lifting. It's the opposite of a chop. So you're going from a low position to high. This might be something, if you worked on a farm or something, you might be picking up a hay bale and kind of tossing it up from the ground position at an angle and tossing the bale up onto a stack. And the other type of rotation, which is probably a little more familiar for most of you, would be like swinging a golf club or swinging a tennis racket. So these all require that rotational movement of our hips and shoulders moving together and making sure that that's happening so that we're not putting stress on our low back. Once you've mastered these basics, you'll be ready to start learning compound movements. These are movements that incorporate several of these pillars in one movement. And in the next episode, I'll be talking about that a little more. Now on to this week's movement of the week, the squat. And again, this is a fundamental human pattern that many folks in our culture have lost. Sadly, the inability to perform this variation like a squat can really get us into problems as we age. As I said earlier, we want to stay out of assisted living, and one of those criteria is whether or not we can get up and down off of a chair or a toilet. So let's put that off for later instead of sooner. One of the goals of this program series is to encourage you to create a movement practice that allows you to perform your activities of daily living safely and efficiently. We are anatomically designed to squat for eliminating waste, giving birth, and even as a relaxed position to work or play cards in, as many Asian cultures do. It's interesting to note that in our culture, low back pain is probably the number one common complaint of most folks, mostly due to the fact that we spend 12 to 15 hours a day sitting, which puts a lot of compressive load on our lumbar spine and shortens those hip flexors in our hips so that when we stand up, that strain of those hip flexors being short just pulls on our back. Interestingly, in Asian cultures, back pain is very uncommon, very, very rarely seen because they sit in a squatted position. And this is also a great way, if you do have back problems, if you can hang on to, say, the edge of a sink with your arms and just squat down into that deep squat and just traction out your back a little bit. It's a nice, quick way to kind of get some traction, get some of the pressure off those discs, and then you can use your arms to help you get up if you're not able to yet. If even the thought of squatting hurts your knees, you may just not know how to do it properly. In all the years that I've been coaching and teaching, I would say that more often than not, when someone says, oh, I can't squat, it hurts my knees, short of them having obviously bone-on-bone type joint issues, generally speaking, it is it's usually a performance or a form issue. Let's take a look at the hip hinge movement again, one step further as a way to initiate a safe and efficient squat. As I said last week in that discussion, we talked about hip hinging. It's just simply standing up straight and pushing your hips rearward before you even start to bend your knees. And then the knees follow with their bending. So we're pushing our center of gravity towards the rear. I'm going to offer you a couple of starting squat progressions for you to rediscover this primal human movement pattern. Did you know that most of us as babies, when we were learning to stand, started in a squat position, and then just one day we stood up from there? So if you've had the chance to watch a young toddler learning how to stand, you'll notice that they generally will get on their hands and knees and then kind of rock back onto their feet in a squat position and just kind of sit there for a while. And then at some point, we stand up. And this is, again, a pattern that we want to reclaim, especially if we haven't been using it later in our life. Here are a few safe progressions for you to try before squatting with your own body weight fully. So the first one's an assisted squat, which is, again, that like that position I just mentioned about tractioning your back out, where you can put your hands at the sink, where you can kind of curl your fingers over, step back at arm's length, and then just let your hips go back and then drop down into the deepest squat you can to where your buns are almost hitting your calves, if you're able to. And then from there, just hang out for a little bit and then come on up using your arms as much as you need to. So you can use a pole, a railing, a sink counter. So this is a very simple way for you to practice and maintain that squat position with a little bit of assistance and safety. Once you feel pretty confident and comfortable with that, then I'd recommend that you try sitting at a chair that is allows your thighs to be at about a parallel to the floor height position. So visualize from the side, you're sitting at the edge of the front edge of the chair, your thighs are fairly parallel to the ground. Just simply shift your weight forward, have your arms forward, and as you lean forward and drive through your heels, push yourself up, sweep your arms back. And then on the reverse, when you're standing, let your arms sweep forward as you push your hips back and slowly come down and sit to the chair. And repeat for as many reps as you want. This is a great thing to do during commercial time on TV. It gives you something healthy to do, and you're undoing that sitting position, which we really need to work on. And then the third progression of this squat, so we've done the assisted squat where we're hanging on. We've done a sit-to-stand squat where we're coming up out of a chair. And then finally, a freestanding bodyweight squat. And when you do this, I'd like to have you still use the chair the first few times. And what I would have you do is stand very close to the edge of the chair and pushing your hips back first, slowly go down. Take about four counts, 1, 2, 3, 4, to lower yourself. We call this emphasizing the eccentric or the lowering phase of the exercise. You can gain a tremendous amount of strength by slowing this down. And it'll also build confidence that you own that position and that movement pattern. So lowering down 4 seconds, and then just as you start to feel the chair with your clothing, stop and hold isometrically for a 1-2 count, and then come back up. So if you get tired or you can't get back up, you at least have the chair there, but really work that eccentric, that lowering phase, counting slowly, just barely kiss the chair with your bottom, hold it for 2 seconds, and then come on back up. So from here, you can start adding weight in the form of dumbbells, kettlebells, barbells, or other resistance objects. Again, the key to safe and efficient squatting is initiating the movement by pushing your hips back, lowering down as close to parallel thigh as you're able to. Check your knee position. They should be not pushed in or forward, but pushing the knees out and keeping your toes back behind your knees back behind your toes. All right, so now you can tell everyone you know squat. This week's wellness concept is removing the negatives. When we think about making changes, whether they're health and fitness related or not, it really gives us an opportunity to examine our vital health elements such as nutrition, sleep patterns, the movements we choose to train, and identify those obvious habits or patterns that we know aren't helping us move towards optimal health. Many of us in modern society are seduced regularly by the relentless marketing that we need to add this or that to our diet, to our sleep, to our movement practice. And this is something that I would encourage all of you to take a look at. It's much more effective if we look at removing the negatives, and most of us know what they are. You don't need me or anybody else to tell you that. You pretty much know the things that are not getting you to optimal health. So removing the negatives is going to give you a much faster result and more lasting results. Our cultural weight loss obsession is a classic example of this, where we are bombarded with ads for supplements, meal plans, and gadgets to lose unwanted weight. The truth is, by simply removing the major negative elements that you know are causing you to gain weight or remain stuck, your body will start to adapt, and the reduction of empty calories will start to manifest itself in those body forms that you're going to be a lot happier with. When you remove the negative of being chronically sedentary and start a regular walking program or movement practice, it will further support your body to find its own optimal weight composition. So the bottom line is, try not to fall for those late night infomercial ads selling lotions, potions, and gadgets. Take an honest assessment of your current habits as they relate to nutrition, sleep, the amount of exercise and the type of exercise you get, and don't forget stress, and see where you might be able to remove a negative pattern that's keeping you stuck. Next up, we have our wellness quote of the week, and this particular quote comes from a gentleman by the name of Lee Cockrell in his book, Creating Magic. And it's an interesting quote to ponder. And the quote is, "What if the way we had always done it was wrong?" Wow, that's a lot to consider. What if the way we have always done it was wrong? I believe it is healthy and necessary to critically question why we do what we're doing, especially in the arena of personal health and fitness. It's true that we humans predominantly learn by watching and emulating others. Sometimes this is indeed a helpful use of observation, but sometimes thinking for ourselves and determining whether something is appropriate for us or not might serve us a little bit better. This, however, requires us to trust our intuition. And unfortunately, many of us have abdicated our inner knowing for someone else to tell us what to do. I believe that most of us do know generally what actions lead us towards health, and which ones are taking us towards disease or injury. And so by the just a simple act of awareness, we can start making those changes. I believe there's a lot of areas within the health fitness arena that need to be questioned. Each and every one of us should be able to explain what we're doing as an exercise, demonstrate how to be able to do it correctly and safely, and even why we're doing the movement. As I mentioned before, most of us tend to learn by watching others, which is neither a good or bad thing per se, but just because your friend at the gym is doing an exercise doesn't mean it's appropriate for you. So start using your critical thinking and start to look at those patterns we talked about earlier, such as the four pillars of human movement, and make sure you're integrating those into your daily schedule. As we move forward here, we're going to take a look next at our this week's health fitness truth, half-truth, or lie. And this one I'm kind of categorizing as a half-truth. The half-truth I want to present today is you need a day of rest between workouts. Talk to anyone that performs manual labor on a daily basis. Hey, boss, I dug ditches yesterday. Yeah, I don't think that's probably going to fly. Now, if you are a hardcore bodybuilder and working to complete fatigue, this may be appropriate for you to have rest of muscle groups that you were using intensely. But for the average person, we just need to move every day. And most of you are going to be moving at submaximal levels anyway. So I don't think that you really need to worry about overtraining if you're just a recreational health and fitness enthusiast. So you can kind of set that one aside about having to recuperate unless you're really fatiguing and going for maximal efforts such as an athlete would be. And finally, for this episode, our fitness fun fact, stone lifting. While farmer's walks, these are you might have seen in the Highland Games where they're carrying a 202-pound metal cylinder in each hand. These are pretty intense lifts, and they have to walk for a certain distance carrying this. Most of us aren't used to doing this kind of odd object lifting. But interestingly, or historically, lifting stones has been used in different societies to determine work hardiness. Can you imagine showing up at the employment office and having several weighted stones and you decide you want to be a bricklayer or you want to be a heavy equipment operator or a logger, and they'd say, okay, to do those jobs, you need to be able to pick up this stone. That would kind of thin out the herd, wouldn't it? So, for example, if you wanted, back in the day, when you wanted to apprentice for a particular job, they literally had a stone that they deemed an appropriate weight for you to demonstrate that you were strong enough to do the task necessary for that job. In Iceland, there's a rite of passage for young men to be acknowledged as a man, to be able to, in order to be able to wear a hat. Just imagine, just to wear a hat in society, they had to be able to pick up a designated stone. So this was one of their rites of passage. Lifting stones has also been used to determine the suitability of a suitor for marriage. Boy, that would shake things up a little bit, wouldn't it? Now that puts a little pressure on the prospective suitor, for sure. So throughout time, stone lifting has been a formal and informal part of physical culture throughout time. That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for listening. So as we finish up the show today, I want to remind you that you're listening to Active Healthy Aging on KCIW 100.7 on the FM dial. I'm Coach Ken, and I want to pass along our standard disclaimer at this point that the information and opinions expressed on this show are for informational and entertainment purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, and or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or healthcare provider regarding any medical issue you may be experiencing. Until next time, be well, be fit.